Please be seated. It is I. Do not be afraid. This is what Jesus tells his disciples. They're in the middle of the sea in a boat small enough for the 12 to row. The wind is so strong it stirs the waters. All of their efforts rowing are giving them little reward. Imagine their frustration. They've just left a crowd of 5,000 people. They face the stress or feelings of powerlessness that accompanied being responsible for feeding this crowd with only 5 loaves and 2 fish. They've helped their leader distribute the food and collect the leftovers, miraculously indeed. And then Jesus, who seems to be the only one who knows what he's doing, disappears up a mountain all by himself, leaving the disciples alone with that crowd. The next thing you know, night is falling. Jesus is still nowhere to be found, and they're crossing the sea in a boat, and a storm rises around them. I think if I found myself out on a sea at night in a storm after a long day of healing and feeding and crowd control, I'd feel pretty tired, to say the least. I imagine I'd be pretty scared, feel pretty powerless, feel like I didn't have the strength to carry myself through this storm of life. I might even feel a little bit hopeless, left to my own devices. Perhaps there was a time in your life when you felt this way, when you were afraid, maybe even a little hopeless. When was it? Had you suffered the loss of a loved one? Or perhaps the loss of part of yourself, your health, your livelihood, a sense of identity or purpose? Maybe you were struggling in a relationship with a friend. Perhaps you're experiencing it right now. Perhaps you're in that moment of life. The winds of change roll in and require that we take notice of our frailty, our limitations, our own powerlessness. The first time I remember coming up against my own limitations in a real powerful way, I was 17 years old. I was living as an exchange student in Tokyo, Japan, thousands of miles away from my home and my family in Florida, the people who always helped me find the answer when I found myself powerless before. The sandy beaches of Florida were replaced with steel and cement, sunshine swapped for neon, and my trusted Roman alphabet, even the very alphabet, was exchanged for these suspect pictures that seemed to spell meaning for someone, but not me, not yet. And my affectionate family was replaced with an unknown and distant host family. The 3 children were much my junior, and though my Japanese was almost at the level of the youngest child's, she didn't offer any real companionship. Worse still were the parents. The father would come home late in the night, stumbling into walls and smelling of alcohol, and the mother ignored me as much as she could. As I came toward her, she seemed to run in the other direction, really. She was still more gentle with me than she was with her own children, who she prodded with yells and smacks. I tried to be kind and as friendly as I could be in broken Japanese, and I have to say that was pretty darn friendly. But even my nonverbal attempts at friendship, smiles, helping with chores, were dismissed. I just couldn't understand it. This was the first time in my life that I hadn't been able to work through a problem in a relationship. And now, thousands of miles away from my family and my home, my best efforts could do nothing to impact these dysfunctional relationships. And I was supposed to live with them for an entire year. Boy, that seemed like an eternity at 17. Day after day, I gave it my best efforts, and after a few months of my futile, and after a few months, my fruitless efforts began to take a toll. Each night on my train ride home, which was about 45 minutes or an hour, I would try to hide from the other passengers on the train the rush of tears that accompanied thoughts of spending yet another night in that lonely, unhappy home. I felt alone on a turbulent sea, and I felt powerless and afraid. One night on my train ride home, which was like every other's, my earphones on, my head down, and tears rolling down my cheeks, a Polish woman tapped me on the shoulder. And recognizing the lonely look on my face from her own experience living abroad, she gave me her phone number. Well, the moment I walked into the house, I ran to the phone and called this woman. We set a lunch date for the next afternoon. And starved for connection, I ventured to this stranger's home. We cooked lunch together and we shared stories. She shared her stories with me. And then when she felt the mood was safe enough, she turned the conversation to me. And she didn't start with the small talk. She went right to the heart of my sadness and my powerlessness and my fear. I shared with her stories about my host family. I told her the efforts I had made to change the situation. And then she asked me this question that seemed like the strangest question to this 17-year-old invincible adventurer. She asked me if I had spoken to God about it. Had I spoken to God? Well, what good would that do, I thought. What could God do that I couldn't do myself? But I had few options left. I'd exhausted my efforts. My Polish angel suggested that I set a date by which to make a decision about my situation. Was I going to go home? Was I going to try a new family? What was I going? Was I going to stay put? Make a decision about my situation and then simply pray. So I went home and set a date, and I started praying like crazy for some wisdom and clarity and hope. It's funny. For the first time in months of futile effort, a kind of peace washed over me. And even though I didn't know how or when, I had a trust that my situation would change, that someone was listening to me, someone was on my side and could do something in the midst of my nothing. Within a few months, I found a new family to live with, and it was just in time for Christmas, which made a 17-year-old very happy. And I lived happily and peacefully with them for the rest of my year in Japan. They were a wonderful family and treated me like family. Unfortunately for me, this story has a happy ending. Not all stories do. But fortunately for all of us, the value of this story isn't in the resolution. The value in my story, perhaps in your story, I pray, is the value that can be found in today's gospel. The disciples, faced with the overwhelming task of feeding this mob, they feel hopeless. In their lament that neither 6 months' wages nor the meager 5 loaves and 2 fish they can offer are good enough, we hear their feelings of powerlessness, that their best efforts will still fall short. And they're left with the weight of their own limitations. But the story doesn't end there. With the disciples still helpless, Jesus invites the 5,000 people in need of nourishment to accept the fulfillment he offers. Everyone is fed until they are satisfied, and still 12 baskets of leftovers are gathered from the modest 5 loaves and 2 fish. The sustenance Jesus offers is not finished, is never ending. Yet, like us who tend to forget the fulfillment that Christ offers as soon as the current crisis passes, the disciples again find themselves relying not on Jesus, but only on themselves as they row on this raging sea. No matter how hard they row on that dark, raging sea, that darn wind just keeps blowing. They're getting nowhere. In the midst of their struggle, Jesus comes and says to them, "It is I. Do not be afraid." He doesn't say, "You fools, didn't you have enough faith to know that I would come back to you? Why didn't you just wait on the shore?" In fact, in John's telling of the story, Jesus doesn't seem to be the least bit angry or upset about the apparent lack of doubt that the disciples have. He comes to them and meets them where they are and receives them and calms them and saves them. And John tells us that then the disciples wanted to take him on the boat. The disciples then decide to take God on board with them. What a good idea. Have you talked to God about it? What a good idea. They decide to take God on board with them, much the way that I decided to do when that Polish angel extended Christ to me. And what's missing from this story that we're told in today's gospel is significant. We're not told that when the disciples welcome Jesus, or when Jesus steps on board the boat, that the storm immediately ceases. John doesn't tell us that. We can assume that the storm continues, even in the presence of Jesus. We all at some point face the storms of life. No one can escape this, not us, not the disciples, not even Jesus on the cross. But in the midst of our storms, Jesus comes to us, promising to be with us in the midst of our suffering, calming our fears, feeding our hungers, carrying us through our storms. Jesus taps us on the shoulder and calls us to something greater than our fears, something stronger than our powerlessness. Jesus invites us to risk trust, to risk faith. The happy ending to our story, to every story, is that Jesus offers himself and accompanies us even in the midst of of the chaos of our storms. Thanks be to God. Amen.
Amen.